Welcome to Deconstructed. I'm TJ O'Hara, the Principal Political Analyst for IVN. Our goal on Deconstructed is to break down important political issues with outstanding guests, so you can develop your own more informed opinion. My guest today is Lulu Freistadt, an Emmy Award-winning journalist and filmmaker whose election security investigations have received over 4 million views on Now This. They've also been featured by Politico, MSN.com, The Young Turks, The Hollywood Reporter, The Christian Science Monitor, Salon, Truthout, Alternet, and many other media outlets. Her recent investigations have also resulted in a top Florida election official's conduct being declared illegal and voting machines in Wisconsin being decertified. She's worked in broadcast television for over 10 years, including assignments with NBC, CBS, and ABC News and Nightline. And her first documentary, Hollerback, Not Voting in an American Town, received a Best Documentary Award. Lulu is the communications director of a new nonprofit project dedicated to elevating the issue of election reform called Smart Elections, which we will discuss in detail. Once again, Lulu, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Deconstructed.
Oh, TJ, it's always a pleasure to be here.
For the purpose of transparency, I work behind the scenes with a wide variety of election integrity advocates like Lulu, who are trying to do what's best for the country. With that being said, let's jump right into it. Tell us about the new organization, Smart Elections.
Smart Elections is a nonpartisan project, and our focus is to bring election reform groups together for more effective action. If you think about it, there's really four main sectors in the election reform movement. There's anti-corruption, which I know you and your followers are very focused on, and there's really three other sectors. There's voting rights, that's often focused on voter suppression, voters being purged from the rolls, long lines at the polls. There's also a disability rights movement that is very powerful, which is disability advocates trying to make sure that voters with disabilities have independent access and private access and are comfortable. And there's election security, which is the area that I focused on for the last 10 years. But what I noticed is that a lot of those groups work in isolation. They have some connectivity with each other, especially the voting rights groups tend to be very connected to each other, and the anti-corruption groups have a fair amount of connectivity. But there is very little connectivity across sectors, even though all of these groups are working to improve our elections. And what I came to understand is that if these groups could work with more connectivity, could really understand that we all need to support each other, we could create a very powerful national election reform movement, something that would elevate election reform to a national priority, the way that other issues such as criminal justice reform have and climate change have become national priorities. We really need election reform to move into that status as a national priority that candidates are always asked to take a position on, that is asked about at the debates. Because if you think about it, elections are how we decide all of these other issues. And the fact that our elections are in such disrepair means that we are not making effective progress on many of the issues that we want to. So no matter what your issue is, and I know that people have a wide spectrum of issues where they say, well, this is my number one issue. My number one issue is small government, or my number one issue is corruption, or my number one issue is the climate. You know, the planet is imploding. If you cannot take some of your time and some of your focus and turn it to election reform, then your other efforts will be less effective. And so this is why we're saying have election reform groups come together and other groups realize the importance of this, and let's raise election reform to its proper place as an issue of national concern. And that is the main focus of Smart Elections.
Well, that's a great approach. Now, SMART is an acronym. What does that stand for?
Okay. SMART stands for Secure, Marked and Audited by Hand, Accessible and Accurate, Registration for All Eligible Voters, and Transparent. And especially in that marked by hand, we do understand that that is for those who are able to mark by hand. And we're very concerned that disability advocates be given the proper focus and attention that they deserve so that voters with disabilities do have good options when they can't mark a ballot by hand. But security experts do recommend that when possible, voters mark that ballot by hand themselves, because that is the number one way to make sure that the ballot actually has the voter's intention.
Lulu, what has Smart Elections done so far?
Well, our first focus has been on hybrid voting machines, which is a new type of voting machine that election security experts are saying is very risky and dangerous. And so what we've done is we've produced a three-part investigative series about this new technology, hybrid voting machines. And you can watch the first part of that series at our website, smartelections.us. And there you'll find the five-part investigation, and it will inform you about why these machines are so risky.
Can you walk us through that? What's the particular risk associated with a hybrid voting machine?
It's really frightening, TJ, and this is the reason why we've chosen this as our number one priority right now. There's so many urgent issues, but when I started reading about these machines, I understood that these could really unravel the entire process that we have set up to try to make sure that our elections are secure. So this is it in a nutshell. Hybrid voting machines combine a ballot marking device, which is a voting machine that marks the ballot for a voter when they can't mark it themselves, like a voter with a disability, and a technique that we use for other voters. Usually that would be a scanner, or sometimes it would be a touchscreen machine. So because these machines have the ability to mark a ballot and print a ballot, both, it's a combined marker printer, it turns out they have another very unfortunate capability. And that is that they can actually mark a paper ballot after the voter votes. That means that you, TJ, you go to vote and you decide that you want to vote for president, but say you're not sure about Senate and you leave that vote blank and you scan that ballot into a hybrid voting machine. Because that voting machine is also a ballot marking device, if it's hacked, if it has a malware program running on it, it can be programmed to sense that you've left that particular race blank and it can fill that vote in for you. So it could decide how you're going to vote for Senate. And then because that's the paper ballot, which has always to this point been the actual document of record of the voter's intent, when an election official would go to audit the ballots or double check that the machine has counted correctly, it would think that that vote was your vote. There would really be no way to tell that the machine had added a vote. And so security experts are just actually horrified about this and are calling it a disaster, because the entire way that we have set up to track whether or not a machine is counting a vote correctly, is counting ballots correctly, is to audit them with those paper ballots. If the paper ballots now can themselves be manipulated, that is a disaster for our elections.
Is there any way to mitigate that?
You know, the only real way to mitigate that is to change the design of the machine. I mean, security experts are saying there's a couple different designs, but after the voter makes their choices, that ballot is passing back under a printer head. And because the machine is designed that way, the mitigations for this are actually difficult and in some cases absurd. So, for example, here in New York, we had a technical evaluation come back and say this is a high risk and needs to be mitigated. And so the suggestions they made for mitigation, if you can imagine, they suggested putting a foam block into the voting machine to prevent it from marking the ballot in between sessions where a voter with a disability was using it. So just imagine you're a voter with a disability who needs the printer, and I'm a voter who doesn't. The election official is supposed to take a foam block in and out of the voting machine in between our voting. And these are expensive machines that might cost, say, $14,000. Are you going to tell me you're going to put a piece of foam into a $14,000 machine? Other suggestions from the testing lab were to take the cover off of the machine so that you can see the printer head working, so you can check whether or not it's actually going when it's not supposed to, which they said could potentially void the warranty. So these mitigations that have been suggested are completely impractical, and we can't imagine any jurisdiction actually implementing them. So the real short answer to your question is there any way to mitigate it? And the answer is no. The answer is do not use a hybrid machine. We recommend that you tell your jurisdictions, do not buy hybrid machines. These are not secure machines, and they're not the direction that we want to be going in. And I want to add that these machines are already in place in states all over the country. Hybrid machines are actually in use in 6 swing states now, and that's Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. Now, do you think about it, TJ? Are those not the 6 states that could literally decide the next 2020 presidential election?
Without question. Lulu, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about election integrity when we come back. My guest today is Emmy Award-winning election integrity journalist Lulu Freistadt. Lulu, we were talking about the states in which these hybrid systems are used. What's Smart Elections doing from an advocacy perspective?
So right now, our first action is going to be on June 6th, and it's going to be in New York State. And there's a couple of reasons why we've chosen New York. And one is that we feel that we have a potential for a victory here. And you need victories. It's very important not to just keep losing these battles. So the hybrids have been adopted in Pennsylvania, even though there was a in the trenches battle there between election security activists and the Philadelphia election officials. The election officials picked this hybrid machine called the Express Vote XL, and now it may be going to court. The comptroller there has said that she may not even give the money for it. One thing I do want to say is that these systems are very expensive, and I think we're going to get into that a little bit later, but it is something to keep in mind. They are some of the most expensive systems on the market. So we think that we need a victory, and we hope that we can get one in New York. And here's what's happening in New York. In the fall, they certified one of these hybrid machines called the Dominion ICE. The ICE is for Image Cast Evolution. And that ICE machine is currently in use now in three counties in New York. But the New York State Board of Elections is poised to certify a second hybrid machine that is actually even worse. This machine is made by ES&S. It's called the Express Vote XL. It's a touchscreen machine. That means you cast your ballot by touching a screen. And touchscreen machines have many security problems as well as mechanical problems. We know that sometimes when voters touch a screen, the screen actually, if it's calibrated incorrectly, might register a vote for a different voter. So touchscreen machines are not our first choice. We don't like them. And New York has never certified a touchscreen machine. Secondly, the machine counts votes with barcodes. Barcodes are not transparent. If I show you a barcode, do you know if you voted for Donald Trump or for Pete Buttigieg or, you know, any other candidate that you might be voting for, Elizabeth Warren? I mean, I don't know if you ever say who you're considering voting for, TJ, but if you looked at a barcode, would you know which candidate that was?
Absolutely not.
You cannot tell what candidate you're voting for with a barcode. And there are many ways that barcodes can be manipulated. A ballot can have a text that shows you who you voted for in text, but the barcode could actually have a different candidate encoded in it, or the barcode might have two votes for a candidate instead of one, because by just increasing one number in the barcode, it could increase the number of votes. Barcode readers can be manipulated to show a different candidate than what you initially intended. So there are many ways for barcodes to be manipulated. And the ES&S Express Vote counts votes using barcodes. And then in addition, it has this problem that the hybrids have where it can cast an additional fake vote onto a ballot. So there's numerous reasons why we don't like it. We are going to go face to face with the New York State Board of Election Commissioners on June 6th. And this is where I am saying to people, it is time. We need an election reform movement. Get out from behind your chair. Get out from behind your computer. Come out and join us. If there is any way for you to be in Albany, New York on June 6th, come with us and face our election officials. We will say to them in person, we do not want to vote on hybrid voting machines. We don't want to vote on machines where we can't trust them and we don't know if they are manipulating our votes. We want to vote on hand-marked paper ballots, and we want them to be counted in a transparent public way and be audited in a transparent public way. So please come with us. We have more information on our website. If you go to smartelections.us and click on Take Action, you'll see all of the information there, and you can join up on our Facebook events page, and you can come with us and take a stand. We really think that it's incredibly important to come together now and get out in the streets. That's what happened in the 60s. People went all over the country. They went to the South. They took a stand, and they said, our democracy matters. It counts to me that people are not having the right to vote, and I'm going to do something about it. And that's what I'm asking you to do. I'm saying, come with us.
Well, I hope people organize behind you because this is a critical issue. Now, why are the vendors pushing the hybrid systems when they know they're not secure and they don't follow security recommendations?
Well, they will say that they are secure. If you ask the vendors, they will say that this is top security, that these machines have been tested over and over again, that they're certified and they're using the most stringent security available. However, security election experts disagree with that. So, for example, if you watch our investigative report, if you go to smartelections.us and click on that, about 3.5 minutes in, you will see a back-to-back dialogue. You'll see a vendor making a sales pitch and making statements and claims about a hybrid system. And then we've intercut that with an election security expert, Professor Andrew Appel, one of the most respected election security experts in the country, who's been featured in Politico magazine. He's testified before Congress. And each point that the salesman makes, Andrew is disputing it and saying, actually, that's not true. It's not true that the machine can't be hacked. It's not true that the machine is more affordable. It's not true that the machine is faster. In fact, the machine is going to cause long lines at the polls because instead of voters being able to mark their ballots all at the same time with a pencil, everyone has to vote on this one machine. So when you see how these vendors are being deceptive, you will start to understand. And really the only reason that makes sense is that the machines are more expensive. These machines are the most expensive machines in the country. They cost anywhere from 2, 3, 4 times as much as a standard digital scan system and a standard ballot marking device for voters with disabilities. And vendors are cleaning up. They're making millions and millions of dollars on these machines, and that is their priority, not security.
So what do security experts recommend?
Security experts recommend that any voter that can mark a ballot by hand and that those ballots be counted with digital scanners or in hand-counted systems. There are jurisdictions across the country who are still counting their ballots by hand. And if those hand counts are careful and public and transparent, that's also a good way to do it. But what most security experts recommend are hand-marked paper ballots. That means you fill in your ballot, usually a little bubble with a pencil or a pen, and that is fed into a digital scanner. And then those paper ballots need to be counted by hand in an audit to a reasonable extent, either counted 100% by hand or a statistically significant percentage by hand to give us strong confidence that the machines are counting the ballots correctly. And I'll tell you why, TJ. This isn't just because machines can be hacked, although they can. There are also machines that make mistakes. So the voting machines that I investigated in Wisconsin, called the Optek Eagles, were demonstrated to have a 2.5% error rate in counting ballots. That percentage, 2.5%, this was in Wisconsin, that was much higher than the percentage that Donald Trump won the Wisconsin presidential election by. And there's another report that came out that is even more scary about machines making mistakes. This is one I just heard on Radiolab. There is evidence now that cosmic rays have the ability to flip bits in computers. And if a bit flips in a computer in a voting machine, it could literally add large, large numbers of votes. For example, 4,000 votes could be added from one bit being flipped in a computer. And this actually happened in an election in Belgium, and they tracked it and figured out what it was. And what they've discovered is that these cosmic rays changing bits in computers is happening more and more frequently as our technology gets smaller and smaller. You know, we're moving into this nanotechnology, and so it's easier for cosmic rays to make changes in computers. So this is not just a question of hacking, although it is, it can be a problem. It can also just be computers making mistakes. And so that's why it is so important that we are hand marking the ballots, using machines that are as trustworthy as possible, and then double checking those machines with audits.
Well, Lulu, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about election integrity issues when we come back. Welcome back. My guest today is the 2-time Edward R. Murrow Award-winning investigative journalist, Lulu Freistad, who's at the forefront of the election integrity movement. Lulu, what's going on at the national level that's exacerbating the problems associated with achieving election integrity?
People ask me over and over again, why are our voting systems so problematic? Why year after year do we keep having these problems? And you really have to trace it back to the oversight. We are not having the kind of oversight that we need for the security of our voting systems. The standards for voting systems in the U.S. are created by the Election Assistance Commission. This is a commission that was created in 2002 with the HAVA Act in order to set guidelines for the voting machines. They have produced what's called the VVSG, the Voluntary Voting System Guidelines, and they are actually now in the process of approving the 2.0, which is a new reboot of these guidelines. But unfortunately, over and over again, every time they redo these guidelines, the process is dominated by the vendors. And it's just the same as any other industry that you can think of in this country, for the most part, where you see corporations basically drafting legislation that is going to be regulating them. You see them contributing to Congress and setting their own guidelines. The voting machine industry is just the same. So the vendors are very influential in setting these voluntary voting system guidelines. And in fact, if you go online, it's actually a little bit hard to find. You have to dig, but you can find the membership of the cybersecurity working group that's working on the guidelines. And if you look, every single vendor is represented there. Dominion, HART, Clear Ballot, Election Systems and Software. And I have been on these calls week after week. And these calls, which are supposed to be the calls that are creating the cybersecurity guidelines for our voting systems, they are dominated by the vendors. And when requirements come up that they don't like, that they feel could possibly make it impossible for them to sell a voting machine that they already have on the market or they're testing or that they have a financial investment in, you can bet that they fight tooth and nail to make sure that those requirements do not get into the final guidelines. And in fact, when the Election Assistance Commission had a panel recently where they took input, they had an entire panel dedicated to the vendors, and two of the main vendors there spoke and gave input on the guidelines. And they actually used the word massage. They said that the new guidelines needed to be massaged more. And I kept waiting, are they going to have a panel of election security experts? And no, they didn't. They didn't have a panel with J. Alex Halderman and Rich DeMillo and Duncan Buell and Joe Canary and Andrew Appel and the people who have year after year been working on election security and really know the ins and outs of the election security of the voting machines. None of those experts have been asked to testify, as far as I can tell, for the Election Assistance Commission. So you really have a very strong conflict of interest here. As our regulations are being formulated, it is the epitome of the fox watching the hen house. And that is why we still are not going to have guidelines that will guarantee us that our voting machines are counting our votes accurately. So, for example, we haven't yet seen them require that there would be no modems and no internet connectivity in the voting machines. There's no requirement that barcodes or QR codes or other encoding that voters can't read without technology. There's no requirement that those systems not be used to encode a vote. There's no requirement of banning the hybrid voting machines, for example, that we talked about, where a machine can add a vote to a paper ballot. And the one thing that election security experts have agreed on over and over again, that direct record electronic machines are the most insecure, where a voter votes directly onto a computer memory, even those systems are not explicitly prohibited in these new guidelines. So even though they're an improvement, I do think that the 2.0 is going to be better. There are ways in which the requirements year after year, whenever the Election Assistance Commission redoes them, they are not living up to what they could do for us. They are not really establishing secure voting machines for us, and that is because the process is too dominated by the vendors. And I encourage people to write to the EAC. The public comment period is ending on May 29th, so by the time this airs, that may be over. But just contact the Election Assistance Commission anyway. Write them a letter and say that you really are disturbed by the kind of conflict of interest that is demonstrated by the vendors being so involved in their own regulation process.
How do you see Senator Wyden's PAVE Act moving forward?
The PAVE Act is really getting better all the time. I encourage people to support it. Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon is one of the key advocates for election security. He's come out the most forcefully against the vendors and sent letters to them and shamed them publicly and said that they're not doing their job in terms of election security. So I really applaud Senator Wyden's effort. The PAVE Act is pretty good. I encourage people to contact their representatives. They're in Congress, all of their legislators, senators, House of Representatives. Tell them to get on board to co-sponsor the PAVE Act. It's the new version. I think it's PAVE Act 2.0. There's a few things that I think could be improved, and many of these improvements were collated and put together by Jennifer Cohn, who's really done a lot of research on this. A lot of people follow her on Twitter. So I'll just run down quickly a few things that we think could be improved in the PAVE Act. Well, I should at least first say some of the good things about the PAVE Act. One thing is that the PAVE Act actually guarantees that a voter has the option to mark their ballot by hand. We think that's incredibly important. It also says that it's absolutely prohibited for the machine to have the ability to add fake votes to paper ballots. The ballot can't go under the printer head after the voter marks it. And it also requires risk-limiting audits. These are three really great things that the PAVE Act does. Things that could be improved. We'd like to see that voter verified paper audit trail not be allowed as a paper ballot. It's not a paper ballot. They're often on thermal paper and they're flimsy and they can easily be manipulated by the machine. When we look at a paper ballot, we want it defined as a hand-marked paper ballot or a machine-marked paper ballot only for voters with disabilities. Then there's a few other things that really need to happen. We'd like to replace optical scanner with digital scanners. Those are the more technologically advanced scanners, and they produce a digital ballot image. It would be great if the PAVE Act actually mandated that any voting system has to create a digital ballot image and that those digital ballot images have to be made available to the public. So those are three things that we think are really important in terms of recommendations for the PAVE Act. And there's others. We can get a little bit into the weeds there, but we'll probably put a list of those up on our website. Again, it's smartelections.us. And please go there and sign up on our mailing list to stay connected, to stay informed. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Lulu Freistat, to stay connected.
Lulu, I think you anticipated my question. I was going to ask where our listeners could go to learn more about smart elections and to follow your investigative reporting, and it sounds like smartelections.us is the key website, and you've also provided your Twitter account. Is there a Facebook account or anything else that you'd like to add where people can follow you?
I am on Facebook. Again, my Twitter is at Lulu Freistat. That's LuluFreistat. And I do encourage you, if it's at all possible, come out for our action on June 6th in Albany, New York, at the New York State Board of Elections, Thursday, June 6th at 11 a.m. Please go to our website and click on Take Action and send that information to all of your email lists, to your friends, your family, your community groups, post it on your social media sites. It is time for us to come together and take action in person, meeting our election officials face-to-face and say, hey, you owe us this. You owe us a vote that we know is going to be counted. So please stand with us.
Well, thank you, Lulu. It's always a pleasure having you on the show. Election integrity is a critical issue for all of us, and it's good to know that dedicated individuals like you are trying to assure it. Thank you again for joining me on Deconstructed.
I love being here with you, TJ. Thank you for everything you're doing.
My pleasure.